Okay, we're going to bring Senate Finance meeting to order. Today is February 26th. The time is about 10 after 9. My apologies for the late start this morning. But we do have two very big bills before us, and so we just wanted to make sure we had all the right speakers lined up and ready to go. Members present today is Co-Chairman Kelly, Senator Olson, Senator Hoffman, Senator Dunleavy, Senator Bishop, and Vice Chair Fairclough, excuse. As I mentioned today, we would like to take up Senate Bill 27 and possibly 26 if we get to it, although I think most of our time will be spent on Senate Bill 27 today. And we do have both commissioners here, Commissioner of DNR as well as the Commissioner of DEC, and they're both going to give us kind of an overview I believe that the Commissioner of DNR is going to give us an overview of permitting in general, which kind of addresses both 27 and 26. But again, keep in mind that Senate Bill 27 is the one in front of us, and then the Commissioner of DEC will introduce Senate Bill 27, and then we'll proceed going through Senate Bill 27 and hopefully get to public testimony on 27 as well. As I mentioned, I don't think we'll have time to get to Senate Bill 26 today, but we'll see where we go. Is there anything from committee members before we get started? Senator Bishop? Nope? Okay. All right, so let's begin with Senate Bill 27, which is the regulation of dredge and fill activities. This is a governor's bill, and the request has come from the Department of Environmental Conservation. And as I mentioned, I think before we get started, though, we'll just kind of get a general overview of permitting in the state of Alaska, and we'll have the Commissioner of Department of Natural Resources start out with the overview. And then, as I mentioned, Commissioner of DEC will talk specifically about Senate Bill 27. So with that, Commissioner Sullivan, if you would, the floor is yours, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And for the record, my name is Dan Sullivan. I'm the Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources. And Mr. Chairman, as you mentioned, because this is a not only important bill, but an important effort from the administration with regard to permitting reform and modernization that we've been undertaking the last few years with actually strong bipartisan support. We thought, since this is the first bill of three that will be hopefully be coming before this committee, SB 26, 27, and 59, that was introduced last week by the governor, that we thought the first thing that this committee might see as important is a broader context of the overview of the permitting reform and modernization efforts that the Parnell administration has been taking on over really the last 2 years. So this will be a quick overview, Mr. Chairman, but we thought for the perspective of different permitting bills coming into this committee, how they all fit together with the broader strategy and even kind of broader trends throughout the country, we thought that it was important to have our first testimony touch on the broader issues for about 10 minutes. So that's going to be the purpose here. So, Mr. Chairman, one of the things I think is important to recognize for this committee to recognize is that the permitting reform effort that we've been undertaking in Alaska is really part of a national bipartisan effort. So you'll see everything from Newsweek articles about a year ago with former President Clinton talking about getting the country back working. The number one thing he talked about was permitting reform with regard to moving forward on big projects. The Economist magazine had a cover story not too long ago on what they called overregulated America, that they said, quote, America needs a smarter approach to regulation that will mitigate a real danger that regulation may crush the life out of America's economy. And I think with the economic downturn, Mr. Chairman, many have noticed, if you notice, states as politically diverse as California, Massachusetts, Indiana, Kansas, Wisconsin, Alaska, are really making permitting reform and modernization a cornerstone of what the legislatures and executive branches in those countries are working on. And part of the reason is it's not only with regard to jobs, and it also relates to American competitiveness. I think some of you may have seen this article. There was a Wall Street Journal recently about this is just one example of where the United States ranks with regard to permitting timelines in the mining sector of the biggest mining countries in the world. We are dead last. We've been dead last for a number of years. It takes about 7 to 10 years to get a mine permitted in the United States. That's with the exception of Papua New Guinea, that's we're dead last out of 25 countries. Certainly this part of Alaska knows this saga with the Kensington mine that with the exception of a Hail Mary pass to the United States Supreme Court that was caught, that mine might not ever even be operating and employing Alaskans the way it is today. So it's an issue that relates to competitiveness, and it's something that both at the federal and state governments we think that certainly is a critically important issue that the legislature's working on, that the Parnell administration thinks is important, and that's why you're seeing three bills this session. Mr. Chairman, I also wanted to just briefly mention, certainly the goal here is to maintain what we believe are some of the highest, if not highest, environmental standards in the world in Alaska. It's not about cutting corners. It's about making our permitting more timely, efficient, and certain. And I also wanted to mention this point is that, you know, when you do have very, very significant delays, which we have had in Alaska, whether it's in mining or oil and gas, particularly in federal areas of permitting, it doesn't ultimately protect the environment. Well, you can make a strong argument. We believe that ultimately, in some ways, the global environment is actually degraded. And the reason is you'll see that the delay can push investment to other jurisdictions. A good example is Russia, where their oil jurisdiction with regard to permitting, with regard to environmental protection, with regard to the will to enforce laws, is not even remotely close to Alaska's. This slide demonstrates that, you know, you delay the investment or you push investment from the high standard places like Alaska to some of the lowest standard places in terms of environmental protection, and you're certainly not doing the global environment any favors. And so we think it's important to highlight that because it is an element of global permitting that you don't want a race to the bottom. You want investment in the places like Alaska where we have some of the highest standards in the world. Mr. Chairman, this committee is, and I know many members have seen different strategies that the administration has been working on, whether it's TAPS throughput, whether it's strategic and critical minerals, whether it's the work we've been doing on gas line or Cook Inlet. Timely, efficient, and certain permitting is an element of all those different things that are so important to the state of Alaska. So here are a couple of the strategies we highlight where permitting modernization, permitting efficiencies is critical to really everything we're working on, and that's another reason that we wanted this committee to have the overview of placing what we're trying to do with these different bills in the broader context of what's happening in the state and how important this is to natural resource development, but economic development writ large throughout the state. So we've been, and I think this committee has seen this strategy before. We have been undertaking a permitting reform strategy for the last year and a half. I won't go through each of the elements here, but if you look at point number one, improving agencies' internal permitting structure to create a more efficient, timely, and certain process, that's really what we're trying to do with SB 26, 27, and you'll see, Mr. Chairman, there's many other aspects of this strategy. I won't go through each and every one of this, but I wanted to make sure that this committee was aware of the context in which the bill that you're going to hear today fits within this broader strategy of coordination with different entities throughout the state, with the federal government, and anticipating and working on what we call next phase resource development issues, getting in front of those issues, thinking through them before they become major issues that are before either the legislature or the executive branch. So this is a broader strategy that we've been working on. With regard to the last year and a half, Mr. Chairman, we think there's been significant progress made with regard to permitting reform, strong bipartisan progress both within the budget process and within the statutory reforms that the legislature has passed. This slide gives you a sense of that, particularly in the budget aspect. One of the things that I think this committee is well aware of, this is where the state government hasn't been doing a good job. This is just the backlog of permits that we had in DNR. And what we've been really focused on is trying to bring this backlog down. We've seen this backlog as essentially a choke on the private sector. Having, for a state, obviously a very large state, but in terms of population, not that large, you know, almost 2,600 permits in our backlog, we think is not acceptable, and we've been very focused on bringing down that backlog. The team that's working on this across the board has done a very good job. We're making progress. We're not there yet. In all of these efforts, in many ways, statutory reform, the budgeting, the IT overhaul that we're doing with regard to the budget requests that the legislature granted, we think that we're making progress, but we're not there yet, and we're going to continue focusing on that. But that gives you a number that, you know, we've cut that backlog by about 1,000, over 30%, and that's on time with what we wanted to do, which is get that down to zero within 3 years. So last year, and I won't go through this too quickly, or I'll go through this quickly, Mr. Chairman. This was the bill that passed last year, so it came through the Senate, obviously. It was the beginning of the statutory changes. And one theme that you'll see as you see these bills, there's no panacea here. There's no silver bullet. What these are different requests, different ideas, mostly internal, but also we've been going throughout the state holding public meetings literally all over the state, asking municipalities, asking different stakeholders how they think we could make our permitting system more efficient, timely, and certain. We started last year. This was a governor's bill that was introduced halfway through the session. It got through with strong bipartisan support. And what you're going to see this legislative session, Mr. Chairman, is HB 26, and I know that we're not going to be focused on that today, so I'll just move through that until we are. And then HB 27, which Commissioner Hartig will be focusing on, but again, a hugely important element of not only making our own system through legislative changes more efficient, but also moving forward with regard to the issue of primacy. That's so important that we've been doing that for years, and Commissioner Hartig will go into a little bit more detail with regard to SB 27, but having that primacy and continuing that is another element of our statutory permitting reform modernization that we think is absolutely critical to the state really, you know, taking charge and having much more control over its own future, its own destiny on very large projects and even small projects that relate to federal permitting, in this case, the Clean Water Act. So that's an overview, Mr. Chairman, and we wanted this committee to have a sense of where this bill fits into the broader efforts that we've been undertaking the last year and a half. As I mentioned, it's an area where there's been strong bipartisan support on the budget side, on the legislative side, and we certainly want to continue that and appreciate the support that we've been getting from the legislature on permitting reform. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Sullivan. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can we revert to the slide number 8? You know, the legislature in the last several years has been looking at the backlog and has asked the department to come up with budgetary proposals to get the backlog down. And we're moving in the right direction, but is there additional budgetary requests that can increase this this endeavor? Because I think it was the legislature that identified the backlog and asked the department to see what they could do about reducing the backlog.
Yeah. Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, it's a great question, and I moved to slide 7 because if you remember, and I know you were very much a part of it. We really appreciate it. In two legislatures ago, we came to legislature with pretty significant requests with regard to mining land and water, not only with regard to personnel funding, filling vacant positions that we thought were important to get that backlog down, but also if you look at that, the unified permit project, document management with regard to capital funding. So what we thought was very important, and again, we got great support, bipartisan support from the legislature, was we focused on that budgetary aspect 2 years ago. We feel that right now, and as you know, Senator Hoffman, we used that $2.7 million, which was for one division, a pretty significant increment to bring on a whole lot of new folks, fill in previously unfilled positions in primarily in the mining land and water section, hiring them, getting them trained, and then making progress on this unified permit project, which was a capital budget request. So what we did last legislative session is that was a one-time item, is to get that kind of embedded in the budget, which did happen with regard to the mining land and water budget. So we think at this juncture we're feeling pretty good on the budget side. But again, we did get very significant support from the legislature, if you look at this slide, on what we thought, you know, we've kind of described this as, particularly this slide, as kind of fixing an airplane in flight, because obviously we're getting more permits in with all kinds of new activity. We're trying to modernize the system from an IT standpoint. We hired and trained a bunch of new people, and at the same time we're trying to bring this backlog down. So we think we're, you know, the informal goal that we discussed with you during that period was trying to get that down to essentially zero within 3 years. Hopefully we're on target for that, but I think we're feeling pretty good on the budgetary side simply because we got a significant increment from the slides that I was telling you about here in slide 7, and I know you were an important part of that.
Senator Hoffman, go ahead.
Thank you. One final question on slide 5. On the right-hand side, we have item 4, attract new investments in markets for Alaska's abundant mineral resources. Can you expand on that? What are the prospects
you
see?
Point number
new
four?
New investments.
You mean number 5?
Yeah.
Sure. Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, one of the things that we've been doing, whether it's the strategic and critical minerals, or if you look at the other strategy that we've been implementing, essentially the TAPS throughput focus on turning the TAPS decline around, is we have been very aggressive in going out to different conferences, different companies, both in the U.S. and even outside the United States, to promote what we think is still probably one of the greatest natural resource basins in the world. And an example on the strategic and critical minerals is 2 years in a row we've now put on a strategic and critical minerals summit in Fairbanks in November. We're going to make that an annual meeting, annual summit in Fairbanks. In the last 2 years, we've had enormous response. We've sold that event out twice now. Native corporations have been the big presenters this past year. We got companies from literally all over the country, governments from the Japanese government, the German government. So we're very focused on getting out and making the case that this is a great place to invest, to responsibly develop resources. I was down at the North American Petroleum Expo, NAPE, just 3 weeks ago. We finally got a speaking role there. Again, a lot of Alaska companies had booths that were next to the state of Alaska's booth. We've been partnering with a lot of our companies, our native corporations, others, to attract the investment that we need both in the mineral sector and, importantly, in the oil and gas sector. And this issue of permitting reform plays into that. They ask, and we tell them that we're working hard on that.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Senator Olson.
On that point, Commissioner, I can see you can have lots of symposiums, you can have lots of gatherings of people getting together, but how many companies with your streamlining process have actually put down money here in the state of Alaska within the last year or two since this push has been going on? I mean, I don't see any corporations that have said, yes, we're putting down $1 million for this resource that we're going to try and extract from the ground here.
Through the chair, Senator Olson, I could come see you offline. I think we've had enormous success with regard to trying to get companies up here. You know, there's in the strategic and critical minerals sector, there's a, you know, what I call kind of a quiet boom going on in Alaska. 1/3 of all exploration investment in the United States in the past 2 years has been in Alaska. You had Donlin Gold, their board of directors made the decision to go through the permitting process. They are now coming for their project. They're in front of DNR and the feds with regard to a permit application. In the oil and gas sector, some of the companies that we specifically targeted, whether it's in Cook Inlet or on the North Slope, are showing a lot of interest, ton of interest. We think that this strategy that we've been doing on oil and gas and minerals, we think is definitely bearing fruit. We have the largest LNG producer or consumer, Korea Gas, in the world coming to Juneau. The CEO and his entire LNG purchasing team came to Juneau for 3 days in December. That was a direct result of a trip that the governor and I took to Korea to pitch them on the comparative advantages of Alaska LNG. We have a Japanese consortium that set up shop in Anchorage. I think this is one of the things that we think is going very well. But what happens is they keep an eye on permitting reform. They definitely keep an eye on tax reform in the oil and gas sector. And so they're all related. But I think that the outreach that we've been doing, the Department of Commerce is doing, sometimes you get told no, sometimes you get told, sorry, we're not interested in Alaska. But most time, people are very interested, and they're keeping an eye on what we're trying to do to make this place a more competitive place for investment.
Senator Olson.
Continue, Mr. Chairman. And I appreciate your efforts of trying to reach out there, because it's through responsible development that we have the lifestyle that we have up here in such a hostile climate to a certain degree. The problem that I have, though, is that as we look at the streamlining of permits that are out there, obviously, we're trying to keep industry within that realm of responsibility that's out there. And right now, industry has not necessarily shown that they are responsible. In the district that I represent, we've got a lot of oil development going on, Shell in particular. And when we see things like the Kulik floating around in the middle of the ocean out there with high seas, I mean, there's some type of shortfall within industry's mentality that are allowing. Fortunately, this didn't turn into a super disaster, but it certainly could have. I guess I'm trying to understand where you're getting the balance from as far as trying to make sure that we have responsible development, but we don't have industry starting to make monumental mistakes like happened over the New Year's weekend.
So through the chair, Senator Olson, one of the things that we say, and by the way, every time we go, whether it's in front of a large group, whether it's in individual meetings. So when I was down at NAEP in Houston a couple weeks ago, in addition to the speaking role before the conference, we also had a lot of one-on-one meetings with companies. And we always highlight, always, the very high standards that we have in Alaska. We say, state has a very strong record of responsibly developing its resources and protecting the environment. Not a perfect record, but a very strong record. We think we have some of the highest standards in the world, and if you're going to come and invest here, you got to abide by them. If you're not motivated to abide by them, then we don't want your investment. I mean, I say that in probably every venue that I... So we think that, by and large, the state actually has a good record in this regard, but what concerns us is when you have development projects that take, you know, Kensington Mine, I don't even know how you want to timeline that one, 20 years, 10 years, to permit a mine, there's just no way that helps the state. And similarly, yeah, the Kulik, Shell has certainly made some mistakes, but, you know, the federal government has made some huge permitting mistakes with regard to what's going on there. 5 years, and they haven't been able to get one exploration well drilled. I think that's outrageous, and it's part of this process that we're trying to undertake. So your point on keeping the high standards is certainly something that we agree with. but we think that there are efficiencies and timelines and certainties that we can bring to our own permitting process that will maintain those standards and also attract more investment and investors that are motivated to keep those high standards.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thanks. Senator Olson. Senator Bishop?
Yes, brief comment and a question, Dan. I'm glad to see that you're moving the needle in the right direction on page 8 on the permitting backlog. And I just had a follow-up question. We heard Brooks Range and Resources a week ago talk about permitting, and they had been waiting for some time for a permit out of DNR. And I just was curious, do you have a methodology or in the department to look at these permits by ranking
right.
and priority? And yeah. If you could expound on that.
Sure. Through the chair, Senator Bishop, it's a very good question. As you can imagine, you know, there is a bit of a triage, I guess you would say. I'll give you one example. We put an enormous amount of manpower both at DNR and across different state agencies, working closely with the Corps of Engineers this past spring and summer and fall, and very closely working with the North Slope Borough on the Point Thompson permitting. We were worried that that was going to be delayed. That had already been delayed a year and a half. We missed one construction season. So that was an example of where we surged in a big portion of some of our personnel to make sure that we didn't miss another construction season and got those permits through on time. Now you're seeing that the construction of Point Thompson is happening this winter. So we do that. It's not perfect. We're certainly still not perfect. I mean, you know, we're trying to fix a lot of our own internal processes. But it's also a balance because, you know, on this backlog, there's some maybe smaller companies that might not have the big impact of a Point Thompson development, but that they deserve to be responded to too if they've been waiting around for a long time to get a permit. So it is a balance. It's kind of an inexact science, but what we're trying to do is make the whole system more efficient so we don't come back to this. This is not good for anybody in Alaska, I don't think.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Senator Dunleavy?
Through the chair, with regard to SB 27, what do we give up? What does the state lose in this process, if anything, to the feds?
Well, through the chair,
why don't we save that question?
Yeah, or
Senator
I can.
Dunleavy, the commissioner of DEC is going to introduce the bill, and then we can direct those questions. If you have.
Just real quick, through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, I think it's actually really more of a issue of what we gain. And I think, and as Commissioner Hartig will mention, we gain more control over the permitting on wetlands, which is in many ways one of the biggest, most important permitting issue in the state on large projects that can take the most amount of time. But as Commissioner Hartig will mention, we still maintain those very high standards. There's not a diminution of Clean Water Act standards. It's just on our timeline, not necessarily the timeline of the federal government, which delayed Point Thompson, which delayed CD5. Those are all related to this federal permitting on this Clean Water Act issue, and we think having control over it from the state's perspective is a much better way to control our own destiny.
Thank you. Just quick comment. I appreciate your efforts here on what you're trying to do with the backlog and making the permitting process a little easier. You know, we always talk about trying to get more small businesses in Alaska and diversify our business companies that are up here so that you don't just have the major three oil companies up here. But frankly, Alaska is a very expensive place to work in. We're very isolated, so transportation costs, your weather conditions are not favorable. And then you put the a long permitting process and legal process in place. Most small companies just can't and won't put up with that. And I can assure you, not many small companies can wait 10 to 20 years to start a mine, or even 5 or 6 years to start a new oil field at CD5, or heaven forbid, all the legal and permitting challenges that Shell had offshore. So, you know, the easier we can make this process in Alaska, knowing that we're at a disadvantage anyway from all the other states and countries, is appreciative, so that we can start helping the smaller businesses and get a more diverse business climate up in Alaska. So thank you for your efforts to do that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. All right. So let's go on now to Senate Bill. Appreciate that nice overview of where you want to go with permitting and the direction, Commissioner Sullivan. Now let's go to Commissioner Hardig and take up Senate Bill 27, Regulation of Dredge and Fill Activities. Senator Hardig, the floor is yours, sir.
Thank you, Chairman Meyer, members of the Senate Finance Committee. I appreciate being here today to introduce Senate Bill 27. This is a bill authorizing DNR and DEC to evaluate and seek primacy for the Clean Water Act Section 404 Dredge and Fill Permitting Program. What I'll do today is I'll describe the 404 permitting program, and then I'll talk about the process that we would follow to evaluate and apply to the federal government for primacy, what we would get if we do get primacy, and what we wouldn't get, and then talk a bit about why Alaska should pursue primacy, why we should be doing it now. And I believe the introduction that Commissioner Sullivan just gave provides a very helpful background for evaluating those points. Along the way, I'll be talking about what's included in the bill, and I'll finish up talking about its fiscal impacts and answer any questions on the fiscal note. With me on the phone today is our Deputy Commissioner Lynn Kent, and Michelle Hale, our Director of Water, is also in the room with me, along with Jeff Rogers, our budget manager. So we have our whole team here. We can get into whatever level of detail the committee wishes on this bill. So with that, I'll go into what is the 404 program. Section 404 of the Clean Water Act requires dredge and fill activities in surface waters such as ocean, lakes, streams, and wetlands be permitted. This permitting right now is being done by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers under what's known as the 404 program, and per the Clean Water Act, EPA maintains oversight of the Corps' permitting program. Again, the 404 permitting program applies to wetlands in addition to surface waters, and this is particularly important in Alaska. Wetlands provide valuable functions in this state, which includes habitat for plants and animals, wildlife corridors, improvements to water quality, and helps flood and storm attenuation by filtering out particulates and other pollutants. Wetlands in Alaska are pervasive, from the North Slope tundra all the way down here in southeast with the steep incised valleys. It's hard to find areas in Alaska that aren't wetlands. Approximately 65% of the state, we have approximately 174 million acres of wetlands, which is about 65% of the nation's total wetlands. So Alaska's stake is large in the 404 program, and frankly, we should be the state that's first in line to get primacy of the 404 permitting program from the federal government. Examples of the types of activities requiring 404 permits include filling in wetlands for any purpose. This would include roads, even small housing or commercial pads. It would include to the largest structures such as dams and levees. The permitting process itself, it has a number of different components, and these include evaluating the activities and alternatives to identify the least environmentally damaged practicable alternative, or the LEDPA. It also involves looking at the proposed disposal site under the 404B1 criteria. These are criteria that are set by the Corps and regulation and approved by EPA to look at the potential physical, chemical, and biological components of the impacts on the aquatic environment. If you will, it's almost like a mini NEPA analysis under a 404 program. The goal of the 404 permitting is to avoid or minimize the impacts to aquatic resources, including the wetlands, and when those impacts are unavoidable, but the actions need to be taken, to look at ways of mitigating those impacts. Now, the Clean Water Act, as it was passed by Congress, intends for the states to implement it. They intend the states to assume primacy for the program. That is, that the states would issue the permits with the Corps of Engineers and EPA continuing in an oversight role. To get primacy, we have to get EPA's approval of our proposed state program. Now, what SB 27 does is it gives authority to DEC and DNR to first evaluate the costs and benefits of getting primacy of the 404 program. And then it also authorizes the agencies to work together to begin the develop the application to EPA and to ultimately seek approval to implement the program if it makes sense to do so. Now, I stress at the outset, this is a multi-step process. We would first do this evaluation. We would work with the Corps of Engineers. We would work with EPA to evaluate the costs and benefits of assuming primacy. And only if it makes sense, then we would be back to the Senate and the House and say, here's what the program would look like. This is the number of positions. This would be the total cost of running this program. Here are the benefits we see to having the program. And you would be the gatekeeper. You know, you would decide ultimately whether to give us those resources to go forward with the application and hopefully to acquire primacy. Now, how do states assume the 404 program, and what would we get authority for? The application itself includes a number of different things. It includes a formal request by the governor for the program. It includes a description of the program as the state would run it, what our program would look like. It includes a statement from the Attorney General that the state program as proposed is consistent. It's equivalent to the federal program, because we can only get EPA's approval for primacy if we have a comparable program to what the federal government has. The application also includes memoranda of agreement with EPA and the Corps with the state of Alaska. This would include how we're going to implement the program and how they're going to provide their oversight of the program. It includes a full description of the staffing with what our organizational charts, the number of people, what positions they would have, their position descriptions, and what our budget is for running the program. It also includes copies of all applicable state statutes, regulations, guidance, and administrative procedures. Again, EPA will not approve a program that is less stringent than the federal program. And as an aside, I might mention that DEC has some pretty recent experience along these lines, because as you may recall, we recently got approval primacy for the 402 program, which is another section of the Clean Water Act, and that's for the wastewater permitting program, the NPDES program. We got approval from EPA to get primacy in 2008, and then primacy was implemented over a five-year period, and we just got the primacy for the last sector, the oil and gas sector, the end of October of 2012. And so right now, the state of Alaska has total primacy of the wastewater discharge permit program under the Clean Water Act, again with EPA oversight. But that application, going back to the application, was about a foot thick. You know, it's when I talk about this, these are details. All these documents, these six documents I described, are inches thick with full of details. But what also occurs in that process is we have to develop the statutes, the regulations, the guidance, the process that we're going to follow in implementing the 404 program. And the experience in the 402 program was that we had to come back to the legislature several times to get additional authorities or to get just tweaks to our statutes so they would match up with the federal requirements so that EPA could find that we had an equivalent program to approve our primacy application. So again, I stress that you will continue to be the gatekeepers, and what you would approve if SB 27 makes it through would be just the first step, again, giving us the resources we need to do that first step, the evaluation of the cost benefits of 404 primacy, mm-hmm. Start putting together the application, and start doing some capacity building. First, I'd also like to mention that there are limitations on what we get you know, I've talked a little bit about what we get, but I'll talk a little bit about what we don't get. First, there's a limitation on geographical scope. States may assume primacy for the permitting and compliance program for all waters and wetlands, except tidally influenced waters and waters that are or could be used for interstate and foreign commerce and wetlands adjacent to those waters. Now, we don't know exactly what that limitation means in terms of exactly what lands, what areas we get and what areas we don't get for permitting purposes, and that would be something that would have to be worked out with the Corps of Engineers and EPA. But it's safely to say that we'd only get a portion of the 404 permitting authority in the state. A fair amount would still reside with the Corps of Engineers if we got primacy. Two other states have already gotten primacy for the 404 program. They are New Jersey and Michigan, and certainly we're looking at their experience. And there are other states, such as Oregon, that are pretty far along the way of considering getting primacy. The Department of Environmental Conservation currently plays a somewhat of a secondary role in 404 permitting in the state. Under their Section 401 of the Clean Water Act, any 404 permit issued by the Corps of Engineers in the state of Alaska currently has to be certified by DEC as consistent with state statutes and state requirements. And so over the last several decades, three or four decades, DEC has had the experience of working with 404 permits, but in a fairly secondary role. Now, I've described the formal process for 404 assumption from the Corps, but there's a second mechanism where states can administer the Section 404 dredge and fill program. And this is done by partnering with the Corps in the issuance and administration of what are known as state programmatic general permits, or state PGPs. These permits are general permits. In other words, they're not issued to a particular entity or company for a particular activity, but they're issued to cover a general type of activity that maybe a number of different people will want to do in the state. And so we issue a general permit, and then somebody who wants to operate under that general permit can just notify us, and then as long as they follow the requirements of that permit, they're good to go. So it greatly simplifies the permitting process for them. But there is an opportunity under the Clean Water Act for the states to work with the Corps to look at general permits for the types of dredge and fill activities in their state that have minimal individual or cumulative effects, and that these general permits, again, would be a great cost savings both for the agency and for the permittees. But there is ability under the 404 program for the state to get primacy for these general permits. And if we do, there's not this geographic limitation on this primacy that I described earlier. You know, it could apply anywhere in the state that we could get this authority for the general permits. Now, looking at primacy is not new for the state of Alaska. Multiple Alaska administrations over the years have considered primacy for the 404 program, and it was looked at in most detail about 10 years ago. And at that time, the decision is to go ahead and pursue primacy for the 402 program, which I talked about just a minute ago, and do that first and get that experience. That was the priority, tackle that one first, and then come back to the 404 program. And that's where we are today. We've got full primacy as of end of October 2012 for the 402 program, and we're well poised to pursue primacy of the 404 program. Now, we've learned a lot from the pursuing the 402 program, and one thing that we learned is it does take time. Again, these applications are pretty complicated. When we first sent the application down to EPA, they came back to us and said there was only 200 and some problems they saw with our application. And we did work through those. That was one of my first jobs in this position, was to work through those 200 and some objections that EPA had. And but we both got experience from that, EPA and the state. What we learned is how do you work your way through that? And one of the things that we learned too was that you can start collaborating early on, and that's something that we would do on this 404 program, is that it does provide that we do this capacity building at the outset. And the idea there would be we take people at DEC and DNR, we would work out agreements with the Corps, we'd be co-writing permits, we would be working together before there was even perhaps the primacy application that was put in. you know, gaining experience and trying to work down their own backlog before we would take primacy. So again, back to why pursue 404 primacy? As I mentioned, about half of Alaska is considered wetlands. About 65% of the nation's wetlands are in Alaska. With so many wetlands affecting so many projects in this state, and these 404 permits are usually one of the major permitting obstacles to get through, they can really, if they delay a project, you know, they could be the key permit that has to be resolved before they can go forward. So it is really important to make sure that the agencies that are responsible for evaluating these permit applications and working them through the public process and getting them out the door has the resources to do that. And one of the big concerns we have today is with the declining federal budget, you know, we're seeing all the federal agency budgets tighten down, including those of EPA and the Corps, and we're worried about their ability to keep up with the permits in Alaska, particularly as Dan and his people have success in trying to attract new companies, new projects to Alaska. We can safely say that they're going to need 404 permits. Those are going to be important permits for those projects, and those permits are going to need to be worked hard by the agencies, so they're going to need the resources to do that. One of the advantages that we've seen with the 402 program at DEC is we do have the flexibility there, and also in our Clean Air Act, we have primacy of that program from EPA and have for several decades. We do have the ability to shift resources around and to set our own priorities. Commissioner Sullivan a minute ago mentioned Point Thompson. Well, that involved a major air permit, and our agency was able to get that out timely, even before time. But that meant that, you know, we had to look at what was on our plate in terms of air permits and be able to shift things around and give that one priority. And it doesn't always, when I say, you know, we shift resources around to set our priorities, it doesn't necessarily mean those that go to the bottom of the list are hurt in any way. It may be that they already have a permit and that we can just automatically extend their permit rather than reissuing it. And as long as they don't need any changes to their permit or anything like that, it doesn't affect them in any way. So that gives us that flexibility to move things around. The federal agencies typically have a little more difficulty with doing that for a variety of reasons. We're a little bit more nimble at the state level. And again, it does fit in well with our objectives in this administration for timely and efficient and predictable permitting. So some of the benefits that we see with a state-run 404 program is that although we would still have, again, the oversight of the Corps of Engineers and EPA, we would have two versus four agencies that would be primarily involved in the permitting, now just with DEC and DNR. There would be cost savings for the applicant, greater certainty in terms of funding and staffing. We would also, again, be able to look at more innovative and perhaps more productive ways of doing wetland mitigation. Historically, around the country, when you impacted wetlands and you had to, you remember the no-net loss policy of the federal administration, you had to replace lost wetlands with other wetlands. Well, in Alaska, where you have so many wetlands, we've only lost something like 1% of our wetlands. Maybe just the types of mitigation projects that historically been done by the federal government down south, maybe that's not what we should be doing here. Maybe there's some innovation there on how we could do mitigation in the state. And that would be an opportunity that we would look forward to. The appeal process for permits, right now it goes to the federal courts. If you appeal a Corps of Engineer permit from the administration process, it would go into federal district court, and then from there to the Ninth Circuit. If the state had primacy, it would go through the state court system. The courts here in the state, people would have more access to the courts. They have more access to the permit writers themselves. It used to be when I was doing a lot of permitting as attorney in private practice, I made a lot of trips to Seattle to meet with federal officials. It's much more convenient when you can walk down the street and you see your permit writer. It's also more convenient for the public. On the enforcement, it would be done here within the state. Also, if it's a state-run program, then Endangered Species Act consultation, essential fish habitat consultation, and the NEPA process don't apply to state decisions. And so that we would still have these memorandum of agreement in place with other federal agencies on how the state would work with them, but a lot of the other federal requirements may not apply. if there was no other federal trigger on the project. So what does the legislation do? Again, first, it provides for this evaluation that would be done collectively by DNR and DEC. We would be looking at the same time, not just getting the 404 program, but what the opportunities would be to build out the general state programmatic permits, the general permits, and get more of those going in the state. We would look at it being a multiple year process that we would be coming back to the legislature, if not just to build, get the resources we need to do the application and to build the program, but along stops along the way where we might need additional authority or tweaks to our existing authority. What we would anticipate is that there would be several years of this evaluation capacity building phase, and then probably around fiscal year 2016, we'd be in a position to come back and give you a clear picture about the number of people and the budget for the program, the cost of the program, what we would be able to get in terms of the geographic scope, what we'd be able to do in terms of more general permits in the state and to make that more efficient. And you would see the full cost of the program. And again, you would be the gatekeepers at that point, deciding whether to go forward, you know, with the full primacy application. We wouldn't be able to go forward until we had all those resources. Again, EPA would not approve an application unless they saw our budget, the people in place, the statutes in place would all have to be there. The fiscal note that you see with it, it provides, it's just one fiscal note for DEC that includes an amount in the services column that would fund the DNR position, so you see a zero fiscal note for DNR. The idea would be that we would start with five DEC people, two DNR people. They would be working on the evaluation. They would be meeting with the Corps and EPA, doing the evaluation of the cost benefits of the program, what it would look like, putting together the application. Again, that would give us a detailed look at the program. And then, again, around 2016, fiscal year 2016, I think that's where we'd be back to you with the full proposal. I think one last thing I'd mention about what the program isn't. I've heard several times in this building, the first time I heard it, I was a bit surprised, is that, oh, this is another pebble bill. And I thought, I'd never heard that mentioned in, you know, the last few years that the administration's been looking at that, it never came up. But I think where it came up, and it made sense when somebody explained it to me in the building, and that is that everybody's heard about EPA doing the Bristol Bay Watershed Assessment under Section 404C. They call it their 404C authority. And whatever authority they have under Section 404C of the Clean Water Act, that wouldn't be affected by primacy. You know, whatever authority they have there would stay with EPA, and if they have authority to do that watershed assessment, they could continue to do it. It wouldn't be affected by this application. What we're talking about here is just the 404 permitting program. So, Mr. Chairman, that provides the overview.
And Mr. Chairman, may I just make one other point with regard to the decision-making aspects of this that I think the committee should be aware of?
Go ahead, sir.
Thank you. As Commissioner Hartig mentioned, on most big development projects, whether it's been CD5 or different mining projects, certainly, or Point Thompson, the 404 permitting process is probably one of the biggest, if not the biggest, most timely permits. And what we do currently as a state, we participate typically what we call a cooperating agency, where we coordinate through DNR state agency comments and directions and information that we want the federal agencies to know about as they're going through the permitting. As you can imagine, we believe we have some of the best experts on these issues, better than the federal government experts many times. And what's been a big frustration for us, as typically, despite the participating agency or cooperating agency status, having our participatory role in the decision making, right? What the decision is going to be, we're not asked to go into that kind of room where they make the decision, whether that's CD5, Tanana River Bridge, Point Thompson, Eisenbeck, EIS, land exchange. I mean, there's a whole list. We're essentially not at the decision-making table. And from our perspective, that's a big frustration. And what the primacy legislation would ultimately, if we receive primacy, allow us to do, as I mentioned, is control our destiny in a more direct way at the pace that is not necessarily subject to federal government staffing. Many of these issues, whether it was CD5 or Point Thompson, were delayed from the original timeline. As Commissioner Hartig mentioned, we're working to establish a really strong relationship with the Corps, but right now we're seeing their budget and their personnel being cut pretty dramatically. And then, very importantly, although we would have to abide by certainly the federal statutes, Clean Water Act statutes, as you know, in this administration, at the federal government, there's been a number of policies, kind of administrative policies directed from Washington, whether it's wildlands, whether it's the federal government's oceans policies. These are kind of vague DC-directed policies, very little public input. We knew nothing about wildlands before it was announced, had no input at all. And we've seen federal agencies here in Alaska having to make decisions on Alaska permitting issues that are driven by some of these broader, vague federal policies like wildlands or the president's ocean policy, that if we had primacy, there would be no requirement that a state of Alaska permitting authority, yes, Clean Water Act statute, certainly have to abide by, but a vague wildlands policy that came out of Department of Interior that without any public input from Alaska, we wouldn't have to be driven by that. And some of the agencies we see are driven by that. And we think that that's another important element of this when you get to this issue of controlling our own destiny, making decisions that are based on the interest of Alaskans, not policies that are being driven by Washington.
Okay, very good. We do have some questions here. Senator Dunleavy, I want to give you first opportunity because I think you had a question for the DEC Commissioner, Commissioner Hartig.
Through the chair, I think it was answered, but just simply, what are we giving up? What are we gaining? I mean, is it a net gain overall? It sounds like it is, but what would we be giving up to the federal government?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, I can give you my experience with the 402 primacy, and I think that we would see. I think that helped answer the question. When we first started working with EPA to take over primacy of the 402 program, there were a lot of permits that EPA had already issued that were coming up for renewal, and then the state would reissue those permits and take over the administration of those permits, the enforcement of those permits. And what we were seeing a lot was first that EPA had quite a bit of backlog themselves that needed to be worked through. Second, we were seeing that EPA coming to us and saying, well, we always wanted to do this. We always thought that we should tighten down on that, you know, whether it's the fishing boats or the oil and gas, you name it, fish processors, all the way across the line. You know, we really should have tightened down, but we never got to it. Or we really meant to go after these people, but we never got to it. So we want you to do that now. And if we just took over primacy and we were nothing but doing all the work at their bidding and at their direction, then I'd say we gave up a lot. You know, because that's not what primacy is about. Primacy should be about the state with its direct contact with the permittees and with the public, and you know, feeling more responsibility and being more responsive to their needs, being able to get things out more efficiently, more quickly, if you will. That we can't backtrack and just do what the feds were going to do anyway. We have to do better. So I'd say that what we give up and what we gain is up to us. You know, if we allow that to happen, we didn't under 402, we finally just drew the line and said, no, if it's not legally required, we're not going to do it. You know, it's our decision. We have discretion, and that's the way it would be with 404.
Just a quick follow-up?
Sure, go ahead.
It's really, I guess, a comment. I'm searching. It's difficult for me to find a situation. I'll give education as an example. We used to have, states are supposedly in control of their education. It's not in the U.S. constitutions, and it's in the state constitutions. But in fact, when you look at the budgets and the mandates, our Department of Education is basically, and I'm not belittling the folks there, but it's basically a pass-through for the federal government right now. So our state educational system is in essence controlled by the federal government as we speak. The question is, when you, I don't want to term this as a dance with the devil per se, but the moment you think you're getting something, I guess my question is, are you sure we are really getting something? I know we're getting something, but are we getting the something that we really want to do what we need to do for the state of Alaska? That's the question.
Through the chair, I hope I can answer this question. If I not, feel free to pin me down again. But first, we don't get the money to run the program from the federal government. What we would get is an opportunity to apply for grants, which we would already be pursuing here pretty quickly, for the capacity building and for the application to build the program. But to actually run the program, that would be with state money. And so in that sense, like some programs you see where the states get certain money from the federal government to do certain things, and the federal government can dictate, you know, you don't get the money if you don't do it our way. That wouldn't be the case here. The funding of the program, if it's like the 402 program, would be a lot with permit fees, with some general fund money. So there wouldn't be that leverage on us. Again, I think where it would, the pushback, there would have to be pushback, I mean, from the state. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that with the federal agencies having run these programs for decades, it'll be hard for them to just let go. Then they do have responsibility under federal law for a certain amount of oversight, but within that, there's a fair amount of state discretion.
Sir, go ahead. Use the microphone. Thank you.
The only thing I would say is just be very careful, because even with education, they took money, and with the money they took the mandates, and now that the money may be going away through the budget process, they still have to carry out the mandates.
Good line of questioning there, Senator Dunleavy. And that is the bottom line, in my opinion, is that for $1.8 million that we're going to pay for this program and eight additional people, you know, are we going to get the benefit to offset that versus if we left it alone? And that's something we'll pursue as we continue with this bill. Senator Kelly, you had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Hardik, good job presenting this this bill. I really I very much appreciate the paper that you gave all of us. I told my staff after I read it, I said, now that's what I'm talking about. People come and they talk around bills and they throw out acronyms and those kinds of things. It's very hard to follow, but this is very well done, so I just want to compliment you on that. However, when you talk in, I don't know, it's like the third page of your presentation here, and you discuss capacity. Is capacity just essentially the fiscal note? Is it just buying in the new positions to do this, or is it something else? And does capacity relate to the general permitting bill, that the next bill?
Through the chair, Senator Kelly, what you see here in the fiscal note are five positions for DEC and two for DNR, and what they would do is they would be dedicated to evaluating what our opportunities with the primacy are, to be discussing that with the Corps of Engineers and EPA. In fact, we've already had that kind of discussion at a high level, and we have a meeting scheduled with them in a couple of weeks to sit down in a room, get everybody in the same room, and talk about, well, what all would be involved in this, and what do we think some of the questions are that we would want to look at, and what resources do we need to evaluate it. So these resources will be primarily looking at that evaluation. But the other thing that we learned with the 402 program is you have to start building the capacity from day one, which means, again, trying to get people working with the Corps on maybe co-writing permits eventually, really getting to know the program. Because what we learned with 402 is if you don't start building that capacity from day one and you get primacy, then suddenly you get all these permits, including the backlog of permits and permits that you have a really short time frame to get out the door, complicated permits. Suddenly you've got them, you know, and so you got to be up and running, ready to go on day one. But it also means that your people have to have experience and comfort, so that when they get maybe pushback from EPA or the Corps on something, you know, they know what the requirements are and what the requirements aren't, and they can say, no, this is the way we're going to do it and why we do it this way. So that's what you see in these positions. And but again, like say a fiscal year around fiscal year 2016, we would anticipate being back to the legislature with a more detailed proposal to build what it would take to build it completely out when we got primacy, the number of positions in the budget. And it would be a big jump from this. How big, I don't know yet, because we don't know, you know, what the geographic limitations are or how many general permits. One last point is that during this evaluation capacity building phase, we would be looking at the state programmatic general permits, and we believe that DEC already has authority to do those, you know, that we don't need that. We've included this just to make it clear and make it a full package. But what I would envision is that if we identify, like say for you know, shallow gas plays, something like that, that there was an opportunity to do general permits and that the Corps would work with us on that, we could do that next year. You know, we with the funds that we see here in this fiscal note.
Further question on that is the could this have been done in the budget, or did you need this bill? You have the positions. Did you really need statutory authority to proceed with this, or could you have just done it in your organization and with a budget increment?
Senator Kelly, through the chair, the short answer is we believe that DEC might have had the authority to pursue primacy, but it was a big enough question we didn't feel comfortable going forward without it, and DNR clearly didn't. And we wanted DNR to be part of this with DEC. It really is a multi-agency effort and should be. Just as with on the federal side, you have the Corps of Engineers and you have EPA working together, we believe that there would be a sharing of duties with DNR and DEC. DEC historically has been kind of the regulator in the state on natural resource type projects. We'd probably continue in that role. DNR would certainly have the expertise on land management, so they might do more of the mitigation projects, mitigation banks, that kind of thing. But in putting it together, we would, and working through the application, we'd sort that out.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Very good. Let me go to Senator Bishop and then Senator Huffman.
Good job, gentlemen. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to come back to other benefits of a state-administered program, and maybe it'll help clarify Senator John Levy's question and mine as well. Bullet number three, permits and mitigation solutions that truly reflect Alaska's priorities and unique conditions, yada, yada, yada. Some of the concerns that I've been aware of is going forward, the Corps of Engineers is looking at requiring small miners to do overflights and photograph their properties. And in the dollar amount for the mitigation banks, are these some areas where, as you start down this process, am I hearing you right, where you could go advocate on Alaska's behalf to maybe, hey, we don't need to do overflights. We have the expertise to go walk the property from a DNR perspective and a DEC perspective. And, you know, I could see this as really the way the Corps is going now is being a real financial strain on small miners and medium to large mines as well. Is that something that this process, you could help negotiate this down, or?
Yes, Senator Bishop, through the chair, it's something that we would definitely be intending to do. As Commissioner Sullivan mentioned, this isn't a bill just to help the big projects in the state, it's to help the little guy too, you know, the placer miner. And we're certainly aware at this point in time that the placer miners are having a challenge in interior Alaska, particularly with trying to meet first getting permits from the Corps for their operations. And one of the stumbling blocks is that because of some of the remote locations, getting out there and doing wetland determinations and being able to identify wetlands, you know, the Corps is looking at a process to try to do that with their declining budgets. And we've been meeting with them and with DNR to try to get this, you know, state help in doing that. You know, so that they can get their permits timely and get good decisions on wetland determinations.
And through the chair, Senator Bishop, I also, as Commissioner Hartig mentioned, one of the other issues that we've been working with the Corps on that relates to the placer miners is on the mitigation issues, which again, are things that we're trying to work with, but I think having more of a sense of the local issues, it's not always the case with federal agency decision-making, is the direction in which primacy goes, and we think that that's positive.
Okay, very good. Senator Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I supported this taking over Section 402, but when we're considering the 404 program, it pales, I think, in comparison to that program. And I say this because what we're taking on is 65% of the nation's wetlands here, from the wetlands of the North Slope, as you say, and all the way down to the mountains in southeast. And our program cannot be less stringent than the federal program. So what we have here when we're discussing the expansion of this bureaucracy and the state of Alaska taking over the financial responsibilities for the program, you know, we have the $2.4 million initially in the next through 2019, and we don't know how big that will grow, but the problem is that there seems to be additional questions that need to be answered. You had stated that we would not be taking over the tidal influence wetlands. Well, Alaska has some of the highest tidal fluctuations in the nation, if not in the world. So it seems as though we need to have that further defined. Exactly what are we going to be paying for? What are we going to be responsible for in this? Through the wetlands. As I stated earlier, that the program cannot be less stringent than the federal program, and the goal of the 404 program is to avoid or minimize impacts to aquatic resources, including wetlands, where impacts are unavoidable. Actions are taken or required to mitigate those impacts. So I can see the benefits, but the program was set up by the federal government, and they still have the responsibility for implementing those programs, whether or not there are tightening of the belts. Well, the question that we have to ask us is, what is our responsibilities? What are we financially obligating the state for if we're going to be the deep pockets of implementing the financial responsibilities of this program? And are we willing to pay for those? And, you know, to me, those questions have not been answered today. And it seems as though we need to look at these. This may well be worth the state of Alaska's taking off and expanding our bureaucracy. But we need to evaluate that very, very carefully.
Commissioner.
Yes, through the chair, Senator Huffman, I agree with everything you said, that it needs careful consideration, and the questions aren't answered today. We are not in a position where we can answer all the questions that we need to answer before the state can move forward with the primacy application, and that's why we're talking about doing it in steps. And I would point out, and this kind of goes back to Senator Dunleavy's question, is when we get to that point, again, around fiscal year 2016, where we can put in front of you a much more detailed analysis of the cost and benefits, exactly what we'd get, where those lines would be drawn between federal and state jurisdiction, what we get and what we don't get. I think that industry and others will be looking over our shoulder at the same time, because they know that they're going to be paying for this too. It isn't just general fund money, it'll be permitting fees. And so when they'll give it that hard look too, and they'll have to see that advantage too. They'll have to see, is the state performing under its 402? Is it performing? Is DNR performing? How's DEC doing? Are they getting permits out? Are they timely? Are they efficient? Are they predictable? You know, are they standing up to challenges? Is the public satisfied that we are implementing these, and the federal agencies satisfied we're implementing these in accordance with federal law? So we'll be ready for that test and in fiscal year 2016.
One final comment, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, Senator Hoffman. Yes.
No matter what we do if we take it over. The federal government is still going to have federal oversight of anything the state of Alaska does, but we will be paying the tab for the program and expanding the bureaucracy. And for the years that I've been here, I've been very reluctant to expand government.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. And I don't think any of us are anxious to help out the federal government as far as paying their bills. So, but if it does expedite the process and make permitting in general easier and quicker, then I think it's got some merits. I do have a question that actually came from the mayor of Anchorage, and that has to do with the dredging of the port of Anchorage. And his concern was that, you know, we get millions of dollars, not only Anchorage, but I'm sure other ports throughout the state from the federal government. Would this be impacted at all, or is the federal government not going to say that money needs to come from the state?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I can try to confirm this, but I don't think it would have any impact at all, because we're talking there. Section 404 includes a lot of different things, and what we're talking about here is just the dredge and fill permitting program, not the actual dredging of harbors and construction of levees and those kind of things that the Corps would continue to do. And I might, if I have it, just insert one thing here, is an observation following up on Senator Hoffman's comments, again, which I think are very good comments, things that we should all consider going forward. And that is that I remember a number of years ago when we were looking at 402 and applying for that, and I was talking with Governor Palin at the time, and I remember her comment to me was, well, it's the 50th anniversary of Alaska, and we should be a state, and we should be having authority over these things that the federal government says we can have authority on. We should be pursuing it. And my point is that with so many wetlands in the state and being so important to development in the state, and not just of industry but of our communities, I mean, it's, you know, why is the mayor writing us? Because 404 is important to him, and not just the dredging of the harbors, but a lot of wetlands in Anchorage. You know, the municipality is very heavily involved in 404 permitting. But if we are looking at a maturing state, we should have the ability to control our destiny on some of these key programs.
And Mr. Chairman, if I may just also follow up on that, you know, Senator Hoffman's comments were right on the mark about federal oversight, certainly a budgetary impact in terms of state employees to be able to make these decisions. But importantly, we would be making these decisions on important permitting issues under one of the most important federal laws. And right now, we are not making those decisions. And I think we're seeing some of the ramifications of that just over the past few years, where what we see is very important projects have either been delayed or pushed back because that decision-making, to be honest, has been driven not only by the local districts, but by Washington, D.C. policies, and I don't think that's benefited the state of Alaska in any way.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Thank you both for your testimony today and for the overview of the bill. I did have a couple other folks with DNR and DEC. Yeah, DNR, it looks like, I'm sorry, Tom Crawford? Did you have any more to add, or did you want to add any more?
I don't think so. I'm
okay. Help your bosses, okay. Excellent. Just want to make sure. And then Winfrey, okay. Very good. And I don't think we need to do a sectional analysis on this. I think you went through the bill pretty well, both the commissioners. So if there is, if there isn't any other questions for the commissioners, then I have a few people who've signed up for public testimony. And why don't we go ahead and take the public testimony. Gentlemen, thank you very much for coming today. So let's, and again, I just want to remind people that we're only taking up Senate Bill 27 here. Okay, very good. Looks like we have one person down in Petersburg, Joseph Sebastian.
morning.
Good morning, sir. If you could, put your name on the record for us.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
My name is Joseph Sebastian. I'm a commercial fisherman in Southeast Alaska for the past 35 years. It's obvious, listening to the commissioners and senators' questions, that SB 27 is overreaching. No mention was made how much this change of programming to achieve primacy will cost the state, either per year or by the decade. How many millions of dollars will this primacy cost the state of Alaska? A whole new level of state employees, including a new state building to house a new department of highly skilled experts able to inspect and monitor and review countless complicated permitting requests. This primacy control may escape the federal government control of state issues, but instead, this becomes Alaska's staffing nightmare and an additional level of bureaucracy that needs paid for. It's unclear that the level of new headaches will provide outcomes that will compensate the state for this increased regulatory primacy. This effort of SB 27 is a duplication of federal efforts that already exist and a burden that the state of Alaska need not embark upon at this time. I would urge a no vote on SB 27. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Joseph. And don't see any questions. Thank you for joining us today. Was there anyone else online? Okay. Was there anyone here in Juneau who would like to testify again on Senate Bill 27? Okay. Seeing none, then we'll go ahead and close the public testimony. Before I forget, Commissioner, I would like something in writing on the impact to the Port of Anchorage there. That is, as I mentioned, we get millions of dollars from the federal government on that, so we'd hate to jeopardize that. So maybe you could get back to me on that.
We'll work with the Corps of Engineers to get you an answer for the mayor on that.
Okay, good. Thank you very much. Commissioner, why don't you come on up here? I think we can go ahead and take up the fiscal note here. You lost your support?
I thought you were going to say take up Senate Bill 26, and I thought no.
No. Actually, we're not going to do 26 today.
Okay.
So let's try to get through 27 as far as we can. And I think what we'll do even on this one is hold it over till tomorrow and revisit it tomorrow, as well as which one is it? Senate Bill 2, yes, thank you. So we'll do 27 and 2 tomorrow, which is the mining compact bill. Okay, Commissioner, you've heard the concern here about the cost of this program. And it does appear that, let's see, at least 8 people would be needed to...
12.
Or is it more than that? Is it 8 in the... DEC and 4 DNR. Am I reading the fiscal note correct?
Not exactly right. The fiscal note for DEC, if you have that in front of you,
I do.
The total amount is $1,434,700, and it would be 5 positions at DEC in fiscal year 14. And then if you go to further out years, you'll see that it increases in fiscal year 15 and then on for future years at approximately $1.8 million. And there's 3 more positions that are added in fiscal year 15. So it goes from 5 DEC to 8 people.
Right.
And again, when you look at fiscal year 16 and the out years, I would consider those placeholders, if you will, because that's when I anticipate that we'd be back to you around that time and say, here's what the full program would look like. And that's when you, as the gatekeepers, would say, yes, let's go forward. We'll give you the PCNs and the full budget you need or in steps to get there. But that's kind of a decision point in my mind right around that period of time. If you go to the DNR fiscal note, and I certainly, if Dan wants to cover this, he can come up, but the money for the DNR is, if you go the DEC fiscal note, it's in the services column. There's $879,500 there, but that includes the money for the DNR and for Department of Law. And there's no PCNs for Department of Law, but there's two PCNs in the fiscal note for DNR. And then in fiscal year 15, it goes up to four additional positions. But the money that to fund DNR there, that's coming from the services line in DEC's fiscal note.
Okay, and you know, Commissioner, too, if I, and I'm kind of new to this, the permitting process here, but if I understand this correctly, we have to have a certain amount of people on board in order to get approval of this program. I guess my question is, if we don't get approved and the federal government decides not to turn this over to us, what happens to these positions?
Well,
do they go away, or do they just kind of get absorbed in the bureaucracy, as Senator Hoffman mentioned?
No, I don't see it absorbed in the bureaucracy. I'm not a fan of bureaucracy myself either, but the what I would envision is that depending on how we did on this, the programmatic general permits, you know, if that had been very successful, then we might need some additional resources to continue that. But if we didn't continue with the 404 program, then the majority of those positions would go away, and the budget go down accordingly. Yeah. But I think that, but again, what I'm hoping is that by 2016, you know, we won't have to go ramp all the way up and spend all the money to get to a complete application and everything done before we know we really want to pursue it, that we would know well in advance of that through our discussions with the Corps and EPA what we're going to get, what we're not going to get, and how important this is to us and industry and the public. Do we want to go forward? So I see it proceeding incrementally.
Okay. Senator Hoffman, did you have a question?
Yes, I did, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, I don't know if you can answer this, but do you know how many positions and what is the budget the federal government spends on administering this program in Alaska through all departments?
Senator Hoffman, through the chair, I have some information on that, but it's not current. And then also, again, I would caution that it would be for the full program, which we wouldn't get the full program. Again, there's this geographic limitation, as we talked about, where we don't get the navigable rivers, we don't get the tidal influence and adjacent wetlands, those areas. And so, it could range from 20 to 50%, maybe more, that we would get of the permits that are being issued. And then whether that set of permits that we get would be the more complicated ones and be take more resources to write, I don't know. That's what we would flesh out over the next 2 years. But the figures that we got from the Corps is that, maybe we can provide this to the committee in writing, so if I get any of the figures jumbled, we'll fix them. But the district has about $7.9 million annual budget with 49 full-time positions. We don't know the number of administrative staff to support them. They have their headquarters in Anchorage with field offices in Fairbanks, Juneau, Kenai, and Sitka. About 1,500 to 1,800 permit applications are processed each year. Approximately 85% involve 404 permits, with approximately two-thirds residential applications, one-third community development. So that somewhere in that ballpark, but again, we would be a percentage.
I'll follow up. How many of those bureaucrats would be eliminated as a result of the state taking over? Do you have an idea of that?
Senator Hoffman, through the chair, I have no idea on that one. They're going through a lot of retirements right now, as we all are. It's just the aging workforce, and that's one thing that we would see in building our program, that we would help. We would probably, and we already have some of those discussions underway, where we'd be looking at some of those retiring Corps of Engineer people, key people to bring over to the state for a while to help build our program. But they're going through a lot of retirements, just like the rest of the state agencies now, so I imagine they would lose a lot of people through attrition.
And then if we had, say, 50% of the responsibility that they have, do you see that we would have potentially 25 additional employees instead of the seven that we're talking about here today?
Senator Hoffman, through the chair, I think that gets you much more into the range of what I would foresee. But that, again, that's with a lot of contingencies there. But I think that's more of the range.
Okay. And if I can follow up a little bit on that, I see in the fiscal note you mentioned after fiscal year 16, some costs are offset by program receipts. Can you explain what those program receipts would be?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, we had anticipated that there would be permitting fees associated with this program. A number of years ago, before I was in this position, I was attorney in private practice, so I was very involved in reviewing this with clients, but the legislature spent a lot of time on permitting fees and authorizations and schedules for that for resource projects. And so those limitations that the legislature sent back then, they would apply, you know, to our permitting fees that we would charge for 404 just as for 402. And so they do provide a mechanism for at least to partially recoup the state's cost in doing the permitting effort.
Okay. Additional questions? Okay. Seeing none, thank you, Commissioner. Committee members, I think we'll keep this bill overnight. Bring it back up tomorrow. I'll give you an opportunity to talk to your respective local municipalities and see if there's any additional concerns with your constituents. See if you have additional questions for the commissioner. I am a little concerned about the fiscal note, obviously, and that's a lot of questions have been asked about that already. We'll address this again tomorrow, as well as Senate Bill 2, which is Interstate Mining Compact Commission. And again, as I mentioned earlier, we won't be taking up Senate Bill 26 today or tomorrow, and probably not for some time, because then on Thursday, we want to get to the Senate Bill 23, which is the LNG project, a very important project to the state, to Fairbanks, so we want to get to that, and then also we'll be meeting, it looks like, Thursday afternoon as well, and we'll be taking up, if we have it, Senate Bill 21, which is the oil and gas production tax bill. So, and then, then if we do get that bill, we'll be meeting both morning and afternoons starting on Friday. All right, any questions from committee members? Senator Olson.
On when we bring up Senate Bill 27 tomorrow, are you still open to we're gonna have public testimony on that as well or not?
We could have invited testimony. Yeah, we close the public testimony, but if you have somebody that you would like to testify, we can do invited testimony. Yes.
We're just getting calls in our office about the bill, and it's obviously during off time from when the Finance Committee is meeting, and so I just wondering what we could be telling them.
I was getting some calls too, but most of them had to do with Senate Bill 26. So, if you have, perhaps if you do get some calls on Senate Bill 27, maybe you can express their concerns. But if there is somebody in particular that you would like to have testify tomorrow, then we can address that, or they can always, you know, write us their testimony or send us an email, and then pass that out to committee members as well. Okay, thanks, Senator Olson. Okay, is there anything else to come before the committee? If not, we're adjourned.